got a whole collection of them in there.
Is that right?
He goes all the thrift stores and all, and heads right to the Hawaiian shirt. Says, "How many more do you need?" So he's kind of like, "What do you think of this one?"
Yeah, he knows it. How's that ring?
I like that one a lot.
It's quite a collage.
I'll trade it.
No, he'll trade you for one. I love the colors on that one.
Yeah. I bought three Hawaiian shirts in 1983 in Hawaii.
Oh.
Never wore them again until now.
Oh.
Finally, I saved them all these years, 25 years. Now they're in my
83?
Suitcase.
83?
Yeah, that was...
25 years.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
And I had them and I never used them ever again. Wow. Now it was waiting. Sat there in my closet for decades, you know, waiting to be used.
Now, is this the same one that I've seen you in 3 days?
Yes, I
it's kind of like your fave. Is this your fave out of all of those?
No, I'm not going to change my clothes. Yeah, they may stink, but like Pam says, "You're amazing, Bob. You have remarkable clothing every day." Yeah, it's the same, Pam. Every 2 weeks, you should wear the same clothes.
Huh?
I think
it's
wearing the same clothes every day is very cool.
Oh, yeah.
Within reason.
It's like a uniform.
So. Oh, yeah. I worked with the one
you... Well, I bought... I bought like 7 of these.
So I
do change this, but the rest stays the same.
You mean that it's always the same color?
Yeah.
So you don't know.
They were on sale. So yeah, I've been wearing this every day, this same outfit for the past 3 or 4 days, but I changed this every day.
What you got to do is you got to put your deodorant on. The first day you put your new shirt on. Then the deodorant sinks into the shirt, it'll cover you for about 4 days. And you start over. So that way you diminish the amount of deodorant.
On a shirt?
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
And on yourself.
Oh, and on yourself.
Yeah, in case it causes a rash. So then after 4 or 5 days, you put on a new shirt, but deodorant on first.
Yeah.
Fucking gets in there. It'll carry 4 days. Since I'm healthy, I don't give off too many body sweat polluted shit, right?
These are the kind of things. These are the kind of things you learn when you study media ecology.
Yeah.
There's no time for anything.
No time for anything but to stay attuned and up to date. On top of the surfing of multi worlds.
Yeah.
You should have heard our show. We did an awesome show there the other day.
Good. It was just collars.
Oh, that was the most.
Shields. I said, "What do you think of the collars?" And he was him. Somebody. He says, "Well, they all seem to be lonely, isolated people who had no reference to anything, but somehow your stuff made sense to them." Real some geniuses.
Yeah, absolutely.
That shows how obsolete information is.
That's right. It's something that attracts them. They think it's great.
Except the first caller. The first caller...
That was the token.
Yeah.
The thesis. Then came in the thesis, right?
Right.
And then we synthesized it. With Zappa.
Were there just a lot more kooks?
What?
Were there a lot more kooky calls than usual?
No, just the first one was just like, what the hell? A quadrillion? What the hell is this guy talking about?
Quadrillion dollars.
Nonsense. Crap.
Why is he on here?
Yeah.
And then everybody called up. Another 10 callers all knocked him. Said, that didn't work out.
Thesis.
He just didn't recognize any word I said.
Yeah.
And he got angry. He tried to beat Bob up, and he tried to disagree with everything Bob could possibly come up with.
Because he couldn't understand your language?
Right, and basically it was unfair. We summarized what I've been talking to her about for 5 years. We just sort of touched on a few points and, jumped around. It didn't...
To him it was like a secret language, so he was pissed off because he wasn't.
Yeah. So he tried to get in there and wrestle with it, hoping that he could eke out some.
He wasn't even wrestling. He just came in to say, "What is this crap?"
He
sit back to ask, "Hold on, what are you guys talking
about?"
He didn't even.
But in a way, he was asking, "Give me something I can hold on to, dude. Clarify something for me. Help, I'm drowning."
And she clarified it. And she said, "Well, look, buddy, why would you expect to know something new immediately? You just have to listen for a little while."
Yeah, exactly. Sit
like
back
that.
And relax.
She wiped my head up doing that. I just fell asleep and waited for the real people to come in.
The real schizophrenic.
It's interesting when somebody just calls in and doesn't know anything, is willing to say, I don't know, this makes no sense.
No, but he was hostile. It wasn't,
It wasn't somebody that was wanting to know.
Yeah.
He felt like he already knew and this was crap.
This was obviously crap.
Yeah.
He even couldn't understand it, but it was crap.
Exactly, because he didn't fit into his box.
And he got nailed by every caller after that.
Yeah.
Every caller pretty well criticized him for being stupid. Yeah. Obviously, I had the answer to everything. This was great. Thank the people called. God bless the Bob.
See, people, when people hear
of God, there is a Bob.
When people hear a voice coming out of the radio.
I have to say, I have no intention to let anyone sway my current opinion of anything.
And especially my opinion of this idiot on the radio right now, is what he said. And I ain't gonna, I'm gone. I'm out of here, he said, basically. That was a good beginning. And then it went uphill. It just really highlighted the other side.
You can still do these shows from when you're in Hawaii.
No, I'm doing better. Because it's some 3 hours behind. So at 11 o'clock, I can do it. 2 o'clock here. So I'll do more.
That's
better. Yeah, whereas before it was 5
sleep,
in the morning.
Bob.
Yeah, I'll give it to my illnesses.
Poor Anna, though.
What?
She's up all night, right?
Oh, yeah. She didn't want to do it every week, I don't think.
She pre-tapes a lot of the shows.
She does.
But no, yeah, she's not on much.
At night, she doesn't stay up that late.
She,
though.
Only way she did, she the only reason she did, the only reason I think was she did the late night live was because she was the only way you could do call-ins.
Because
otherwise, if it's pre-taped, nobody's hearing it, so they can't call in.
Nobody's hearing it. People are hearing it.
And that was Michael's, he got her to do that, right?
Yeah, Michael Field said that.
Yeah.
Hey,
why can't they do call-ins? They do call-ins at 9 o'clock in the morning. Why can't they do?
Well, because you're not. If it's pre-taped, you're not going out over the air.
No, but why does she only have? Why does she have to do her call-ins at midnight?
Oh, because she's only on from 2 to 4 a.m.
Midnight, 2 in the morning.
I know she is, but I'm saying, why is she on that slot?
That's all they give her. I think she tried to get on the day; they wouldn't let her on.
Hmm. So there's always the politics there.
Yeah. Why didn't you ever get a daytime show? The politics.
Well, I think mostly because a lot of people in the daytime world just really don't dig, you know, this kind of information. They've relegated to the nighttime. And I actually like the nighttime because people are dedicated and they're there because, you know, they've already graduated a step, you know, and they're ready to, and plus I can do whatever I want. I can bring on the most, you know, outrageous, you know, amazing people. Like some shows that we did, like with GLOW, I wouldn't have been able to do that in the daytime.
Oh, that's right.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, things like that. And, you know, even just getting up, like with Roy, the politics is so bad. Like with, you know, Roy, there was a spot open where I could be on from 1 to 3. But because Dave Emery doesn't like particular people. Yeah.
And me.
And Bob. You know, et cetera. I wasn't able to, like, just move up an hour. Which maybe would help people here. So yeah, it's the politics, and then it's just that I think it's best to, you know, have complete freedom, and you have that at night.
So how often a month do you go live?
Twice a month, depending on, you know, who will, you know, who'll stay up late and
who will
go
take
on
the calls.
Late. Well, people take calls, but I mean, like the guests.
Oh, it's
some guests. Yeah, some guests, you know, aren't up for, you know, they'd rather pre-record. But it's great being up and taking calls from listeners.
Because now we'll be able to do it. I should be on every 6 weeks or something.
Yeah,
since I'm 3 hours behind.
I know you're gonna be even more like bam.
Yeah, yeah. Bob's here. Calls
he's
come
like,
in.
And everybody's like this, and you're like bam.
Yeah.
Did Roy have any? Yeah. He probably heard part of the show wandering around in the aisle. Did he have any? Did he have any afterthoughts about anything?
I watched him walk by the window every now and then. He'd look right in like he was rushing to do something.
Yeah.
Rushing to stop.
Just checking to make sure everybody was still in there.
Bob Newcage right there.
They got a gas valve in there.
Yeah. Richard, you have to forward all the emails you get about the show. Like, you got one the other day. You should forward that to me.
Oh, okay.
You know, so I can read it, what people are saying.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, just said that.
The more critical, the better.
Yes.
Bob loves it.
Yeah. I'm not even here. I just hang around for my critics.
Bring it on. Right?
Yeah. You can't buy me.
Yeah.
You got to hear it. I'm on this other station. You got to hear that.
The James stuff?
Yeah. Have you been
I listened to yours with him, and this guy came off, threatened Bob's life.
You heard the last one.
That one. And then I listened to the next two.
Before.
No, after. You told me to listen what happened after you.
Oh,
day,
you talking about last week, this past week?
I'm talking about when that guy named John threatened you, then the next day...
Well, he went worse. Okay, I think you're talking about May 14th, right?
No, I'm talking about this
week.
Wasn't it this week? It was this week.
A few days ago.
Yeah.
And then you heard them talk about me the next day.
The next day they talked.
Yeah.
But it sounded to me like John was a little bit more like, you know.
Yeah, he doesn't know what to do.
Huh?
He doesn't know what to do. James builds him up and then comes in and says, but I like the other point of view. You know, James oscillates. But at first he builds him up. Then he cancels it. As if you listen to the rest of the show, he cancels it out what John thought he was doing. So it confuses John. Like John said the other day, he said, well, I don't know why we have this guy on.
He did say that. Yeah. I don't know why we are, and I don't know if we should.
Yeah,
and, now, why are we doing this?
And then,
have you heard these? Mm-hmm. Because Bob just basically undermined everything this guy was saying.
What the network sells?
What they sell. And Bob says, no, everything. Because the guy says, what can you tell us is going to happen in the future? And Bob says, say it, Bob. Well, I can say it, but you said
say?
It's already happened. Everything that you're concerned
it's
about
all,
is already
all times have happened. The future is the present.
Anything that you,
it's all going on. It's
was
Mozambique.
Anything that you can worry about in the future, anything you guys are worried about, anything all these people have been, I've been saying for years, it's
already happened. It's that bad and not so bad. We're marginalized now.
I've been saying that for years, too. Is anybody that you see on television is not the person who's pulling the strings. It's like it's already happened. And by the time it's in the news, it's over.
Yeah.
It's over.
But I was saying that all Hopi, Catholic, and Muslim prophecies, the Armageddon, all happened 25 years ago. You know, we're well past the bed. We're even passing the Finnegan's Wake.
No, what?
But I was listening to a show before that because I was trying to listen to that show. And I wasn't sure how to do it. I'm really lame with this. So I happened to listen to the show. It was just on before James' show. And that guy was interviewing a guy. And I thought, boy, I should come back and listen to this. Talk about every conspiracy you can imagine. And you know that on October
13th,
23, the White House is going to take a hit in order to keep Bush in forever.
That's the prediction by
Sean
Morton.
I don't know what the name of the guy was, but oh my God.
Is that the guy that owns that network or something?
No, this is another person.
Another
interview. I mean,
the guy on my show owns the network.
Oh.
John Samuel owns it.
It could have been him.
He created Alex Jones.
Their advertisements, you know.
Yeah, martial law will be here in a few weeks. Have you got your beans, bullets, and gold fully ready?
These guys are selling chrome ball bearings as perpetual motion machines.
Yeah.
But the guy on the show before was saying, the only reason why people really are buying this gold and why they're driving gold up is because it's really going to be valuable to the technology in the future. It doesn't have any other value.
Yeah.
He says it has no other value. So he sounded pretty interesting. But he's the one that said Aleister Crowley was President Bush's grandfather. Right?
As if Crowley was a bad guy. He's just another... I was talking to Corbyn about him a lot. You don't know Corbyn. I did a whole bunch, well, you heard him. We did a good bunch of series on Aleister Crowley. They're like, we've got this, we must have 8 hours or more, right? Well, you're going to be able to hear all the conversation I had all the way through, coupled with her, on the website soon. You'll be able to listen to the whole Bob Tour 08.
Oh,
amazing range of people. Corbyn talking a lot about Aleister Crowley.
Wow. Would you care for something to drink?
I'm fine.
Something? We have homemade soup. In there if you're hungry. Okay?
Good to know.
Well, I would have soup if it got cool.
Well, you need to take yours out and cool it?
Yeah, that's what I'd say.
Uh-huh.
I'd suggest that.
Okay, I have some watermelon cut up if you want something.
I had
really
a whole
cold.
Bunch last night.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
How about you?
I
forgot to give you watermelon yesterday.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm fine, thanks.
Okay. Did he? All right, I'm going to put a bowl of soup out.
Yeah, just make cool for a while. Is that? Who is that? The painting of the secretary.
That's a woman that used to work, she worked still. And Nancy worked with her for a short time. Her husband would beat her up and then send her roses.
Send her,
I would give her a black eye and then send her roses.
I can see the black eye now.
Yeah.
Send her, those are the roses.
And those are the roses, yeah.
And there's a black eye, oh yeah.
Yeah.
She's got to look like, do I need this?
Yeah, that's, you know.
Oh, Bob, you should see the roses we got from my mother-in-law's house. You've got to see this.
Are they here?
This is just the most amazing thing. I had to have. They said, I want that. And they shipped it to me. I want it because I couldn't believe this thing.
How did you know about
this? I saw it when we were out there. This is porcelain. I thought it was metal. I thought it was metal. How does this... It's got some little chips and stuff, but this is broken off. she wrote in her journal that things got broken in the 72 earthquake or whatever it was here.
Right. Where did she live?
Terry could hardly lift it. It's lifted so heavy. And you have to put your hands
But that got broken in the 72 earthquake.
Well, she used to live in Garden Grove.
To get closer to the, the Mormons are in Utah?
Oh, yeah.
So did she get closer to the Mormons?
And I thought, I thought it was a joke.
She was born in Idaho.
It looked like
Idaho
so
and Utah
funny.
Are all Mormons.
Her house, and when I got out here, I like it.
Yeah, that's
the world. You know? Because it's so crazy.
Yeah. You know, Idaho and Utah. She was born in
I went in and tried
in
to
a county that was just, 80 miles away from Utah and Idaho.
So, what did you guys talk about yesterday? He was here a long time.
Bob wants to make sure we were talking about him the whole time.
We talked about
a dolly or something.
The people have some like that. Talk about the thing of your stuff possessing.
We talked about what is called.
You got a memory problem, Terry?
I do.
Need magnesium or something?
Yeah, I need some magnesium.
Milk of magnesium?
No, magnesium.
What is that?
You're asking me?
No. The other magnesium?
I've been taking magnesium.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of this word.
What word?
Not paradigm. The
parapet?
Metaphysics?
Metaphysics. We were talking about how people hold different notions and how it colors their whole...
The user is the content.
Yeah, the user is the content. And so when you take that, and Scott was asking Nancy or me if we believed in any afterlife.
Right.
And we said, no, but this is it. What you see is what you get.
That's Aristotelian.
Here. This one
you
works.
Bloody Aristotelian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically,
Aristotelian. Yeah.
That's Aristotelian.
And Scott didn't agree with you?
No, Scott didn't agree with
you. Scott does not agree with us.
No.
We were not talking about agreement, were we?
Hmm? So you argued?
We were talking about
No, there was no argument.
What's the point?
Everybody just got their opinion.
Is Bob asking you what we talked about?
Yeah.
You're trying to throw him off of what we really talked about. That's what he's trying to do.
Yeah,
we know what we really talked about.
That's the only part eight hours in-depth analysis.
That's the only part I woke up for.
We talk in the phone for 8 hours, right?
Oh, these guys talk in the phone. I don't know what the hell you're going to talk about.
What are you talking about? Like, not going to give me any clues?
Ask Nancy. You asked the wrong person.
Scott, you're not going to tell us.
No. We'll keep it. It's our little secret.
Well, you bring up this metaphysics. I'm having a direct conversation with Walter this week.
No, you're not. Walter's dead.
No, he's not dead.
Not direct.
Dead is back.
God.
Dead is back.
Yeah.
Bad pennies always.
No, it's pretty incredible.
You're saying there's no difference between life and death? That's
now there isn't.
No.
And my chart points to that, and Walter confirmed it the other day at Galena's house. We had a four-hour session with Walter, and it was pretty incredible. So then last night, I showed the video of me and Walter in 1990 to the Galena and the family. So that was great. So James drives me home, and we're sitting around. If he takes, I don't know if he intended it, but if he takes some marijuana or hash or something, he'll go into trance. And he
was
did
that
it.
Video with you with the, whose family? Walter's family?
No, me and Walter at cabin in
1990. You mean he was only able to go into a trance with marijuana or hash?
Well, he has been getting hits. He hears Walter every now and then while we're on the phone. But yeah, he can really go into it. So Walter
does
started Galena explaining...
Help, does Galena help to facilitate the trance?
No, he does it without. So this is the point. So we're by ourselves. And he takes a whiff, and then a little while later he's saying stuff, and I said, is Walter coming through? And he goes, yeah. And so Walter talked about how great it was that the family, his real family, Galena and her husband and the daughter, who we all met, Carol and I met last night, got to see the video. We got to see the way Walter was, because they had seen that a bit in their own life. So it was fantastic. But the things that come through Walter, then after talking to James, he can't remember a lot of what he said, right?
No,
I can't remember
a lot
of what I said.
Right.
What?
I'll be good.
The marijuana makes it even worse.
You are in trance, you see. See, you already are channeling constantly. Brought him out of consciousness.
You channel me.
Conspiracy by your
I will. Yeah, I'll get Bob on the phone so that he can witness it.
What?
You can channel me when I die.
Good. So Walter,
if you'll leave me some hash in your will, I'll channel you.
Hey, man,
I ain't dying. You can't
help it. Oh, that's right.
Whipping post. Sometimes I believe there's no such thing as dying.
You know, that's not either.
No.
You know Whipping Post?
No.
That's a song that the
Allman Brothers
made famous.
Oh, really?
And Zappa's version is really good. No. But the line in it is, sometimes I think or feel or know that there's no such thing as dying.
Right.
No, sometimes I feel like I'm dying. I'm down to the whipping post. Oh. You don't think you mixed that up?
There is.
Yeah.
I've heard for years, it seems that sometimes I think that there's no such thing as dying.
But that's okay. I got my mother-in-law's word that you can read things the way they are.
Yeah, users of content. Scott doesn't want to know that's in there. So he to him, it's proven that it doesn't say what I hear.
Under that philosophy of the users
we
of content,
Well, not right now.
Who believes that they're going to inherit another world and be the lord of that world? Is that going to be there? Is there content in the afterlife? Is that going to be there? So if they believe they're going to hell, that'll be their content in the other life.
Yeah.
So in other words, whatever they believe is what.
He's confirmed what you've always believed.
That's all he's done. He's confirming that old paradigm that I used to hold, which I no longer hold. I don't believe it.
Because I won't let him.
You don't believe what?
that's true.
That people create their world
after.
I do believe they created here.
Oh, I do. I think they do here. Absolutely.
Oh, here. I thought you said after.
No, he did
hereafter. I don't think there's a hereafter.
He did believe that they.
No, I used to think that if there was a hereafter, that it was the way we just described.
So you can't believe you, and you're channeling her. You believe everything she says.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Pretty clever, Dad.
And she's
like one of those evil women who lynch movies.
Who's the ventriloquist dummy now?
What?
Who's I have told everybody that's who I am.
There you go. What were you saying?
Is it who's the ventriloquist dummy now?
Yeah. Did you know that's in the tape?
Yeah.
How'd you know that?
Because I saw it at Jerry's house about 12 years ago.
Don't ever say what you saw.
Walter says that in the tape of this conversation. He says something about Bob, you're a ventriloquist dummy. No, we don't know whose ventriloquist dummy you are. Is that what it was? Something like that.
Yeah.
What'd you just say? Might have been what you said.
No, who's the ventriloquist dummy?
That's So I was telling you about Walter, so James says, here's the thing. The battle was, and you saw, we taped it here, Walter, one day Bob's a genius, next day he isn't. And part of the thing was, I'm not a genius because I use the evergreens. Right? That's what Walter objected to. Well, it turns out that James isn't going into trance just now, over the last 6 months. He's been doing it for years. And Walter would get him into trance and then write all this stuff down that James said. James didn't know he said. So we're now going to get James, if we can, read Walter's unpublished manuscripts. And I bet you'll recognize dimly that a lot of stuff eventually is Walter ripping off him in trance.
Ripping off James?
Yeah.
Well, how would James know if James doesn't remember what he said?
That's the word.
Well,
I said glimpses.
You didn't hear the word dimly.
Yeah, dimly and glimpses.
He's always right now when I say like that.
Well, that's because you're channeling. He's channeling you.
Oh,
then you make him think that
I
you're...
I said, write down Nancy said this beside him.
Yeah.
We don't want it to be Rupert Pismo.
Yeah.
Oh, and this is for you.
Fantastic. Is this for a present that I keep?
Yes.
Yeah, keep it, please.
Yeah, then we're moving into Lemurian. The psychopath on Five Body, Kiki 888. Oh, I know about Sheldon Neidl. Do you know about him?
No, I don't.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
Well, that's synchronicity.
I know about him.
I got to tell you about
He's like a Tibet. He was a representative of the Tibetan occult tradition.
Biz, you gave me a tape. I did.
Sheldon Neidl.
What? Man, say what?
Maybe I'm thinking of somebody else.
No, I did
it.
This.
That's probably it.
Sheldon Neidl. I'll tell you all about Sheldon Neidl, the guy who did this.
This is a really terrible thing. My friend did the graphics for it, so I bought it. You know, and... I mean, I thought it was the most boring video I've seen in my whole life, ever. Including all of Jerry's bad art videos and all the ones from CalArts. And this is the worst. There's some guy just standing there.
Now, okay, back to... So, Walter...
I'll give her some of these of you when you were here.
Good. You mean you have extras.
You well, got extras. I have those three.
Okay, good. The,
so well, they're on the internet.
Yeah. They are, but it's more fun to just watch them.
Yeah,
that's easier. Well,
you watch it on your TV.
So the...
Because you get a big Bill Bob reporting about
what?
Walter. The whole thing about Walter.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
didn't watch it on the internet because it's hard.
I'd rather watch it,
A lot of us would rather sit and just watch it on.
What do you know about CalArts?
Oh, we did a whole big...
I know where they are.
I went there.
No, you don't.
Oh,
you,
yeah.
you used to know.
Yeah, I used
back
to know
how to get there. Is not anymore.
And I turned around
to
see
you
out there.
You don't even know what you don't know, man.
She was my mentor for the first year there.
Wow.
Yeah. What'd you say?
It's a small world. Isn't
yeah.
It?
She knows a good friend of hers is Nancy Buchanan. I went to school with
her. She just said the name?
Yeah.
Why did she say the name?
Because I asked her what she knew of CalArts.
She says Nancy Buchanan.
And she was my mentor when I was at CalArts.
So why would you know her?
I've known her.
So there's a
synchronicity,
eh?
No, I put a video festival on at Cal State LA during the Olympics, and I invited her to be one of the video artists on the panel.
Absolutely.
And she somehow was talking to me and found out I did a lot of costume and fashion design stuff in the past, and so she asked me to do the costumes for this big performance thing she got some great big grant for. She's
awesome.
She does, right?
Yeah, she does.
And so she asked me then to perform in it, and then she asked Terry if he would join in, so that's where we sort of got acquainted with them, and then we sort of kept contact with them all over the... I mean,
that's
they're pretty
great.
Close friends of ours,
oh,
Doug
yeah,
and her.
That's fantastic. That stuff. Yeah, I haven't been back there in a while, but it was... You know, they call it an institute of the arts for a reason. It
right.
really is an institute.
Why so, no? Did you get a...
Yeah.
What did you study there?
The film. So
film?
I was in, yeah.
So
film with Nancy.
Wow.
Yeah. So
nice.
It was
great. Yeah.
For
the
most part.
Yeah. Is that getting cool enough for you?
So, now, whose artwork is this?
It's Nancy's.
What were you guys laughing about? The whole listening.
You can put your...
Just talking about...
Well, we were laughing about institutions.
Yeah.
Yeah, what was the joke?
The white walls of institutions.
Well,
CalArts... They give you nothing back except what you bring.
Yeah, CalArts is... It's called the Institute of the Arts, California Institute of the Arts, and it is an institute that has white walls, and you walk in there and they really screw with your head a lot.
So, you were saying you only get what you bring.
Yes. They give you nothing. You only get what you already have.
Would you like a little piece of bread with that, Bob? You want? I always put some sunflower seeds in it. It's really good with sunflower seeds.
Okay.
Well,
no, put your hand in it.
Put your hand in it.
Yeah, you put it. Mm-hmm. She almost put her hand in there. Did you see that?
Where's your bread? It's a sprinkle.
It's a little crumb. He's got a thing.
I got a thing, man. I got a mojo. So back to Walter. The amazing
we're
thing
we're going to die of germs.
I've been
we're going to live forever.
We're going to die.
We have germs.
We're all going to die. But the amazing thing is Walter is criticizing me for using evergreens, and he was using James. As a matter of fact, James tonight, he brought over one of the soft form models he seems to know, and she wanted to interview him privately, but he wanted to use her tape recorder to interview me, talking about Walter for his own record. And so we get talking, and he says, he gets to the point where he describes how Walter would go, they'd be living together, and he'd go, "Hey, Jim!" And he'd stare at James. "Hey, Jim!" And he acted out, and I said, "Oh, he had set a hypnotic anchor in you, and he wanted to talk to the spirits whenever he wanted to, not waiting until you smoked up." He goes, "Yeah." He was trying to get access to her. Then he would do this. He'd go, "Hey, Jim!" He'd like, look past James, past the spirit behind. So he'd do this whole MK Ultra thing on James. But James realized it, so he went. He described the complicated counter moves he made to that. And he basically, no, don't try that, and then some other stuff. Walter was using a medium, you know. So that's pretty ironic.
Yes.
And that James has been doing this for a long time. Mm-hmm. But that makes sense because he hung up with Uri Geller. James is part. You ever seen that book? The Stargate Conspiracy?
Yeah.
You know, it's all about the Nine and all that.
Right, right.
That whole gang that created it. James was part of that gang.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's pretty heavy in certain worlds, right?
Yeah. Stargate, you mean those guys that died?
No. Well, Heaven's Gate.
Oh, okay.
Arthur.
The Pigeon, Lynn Picnic.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
You read all that?
Yeah, I had them on.
Okay. Oh, part of that world.
Who is the big...
is James?
40.
Just 40?
Yeah, I turned 40 in January.
Who was the writer that was part of that? Was it Arthur Kessler? Or who was the writer? I forget.
Uri Geller and Arthur Young.
Arthur Young. Oh, Arthur Young, yeah. He's the guy who supported... He supported a bunch of people.
Yeah, Arthur Young was the... And May used to be suspicious of him because he used to own Bell Helicopter or something. And Lee Harvey Oswald was part of that.
He owned Bell Helicopter?
I did. What?
He owned Bell Helicopter.
He invented the Bell Helicopter.
He did.
Or what? Was it Arthur Young?
Something like that.
Yeah, I think
no,
so.
Lee Harvey Oswald. What was he part of? You go,
he
was
somehow was inside Arthur Young's network and pushed around as a patsy. And yet he, Arthur Young was very involved in the LSD world, the psychic world, the whole Aquarian conspiracy. He was there early in the 50s.
Yeah, Oswald was married to his daughter-in-law or something.
An employee, I think. Bill Payne. The Payne Ruth. Something like that. Oh, you mean Oswald was?
Yeah.
No, I don't think. No, she was Russian.
Thought he was married, somehow married into the family.
I don't think so. Very good.
Oh, I'm glad you like it.
So,
you sure you don't want something to eat? No.
I happen to eat I already ate, and I should have waited, of course, but you just never know. That does look really good. Black eyed peas, I think?
Yes.
We're going to be here a while. We'll get hungry eventually.
So you got my message to not come pick me up?
Yeah, I figured when it rang, that Scott appeared.
Mm. What happened to you? Is that phone still screwing around?
I don't know how your father called. It doesn't work when I call it.
I might have been out of range.
Mm. And you haven't set up your voicemail yet either.
It's not his
It's phone. Not my phone. I borrowed it from my mom and dad. It's not set up yet.
So you're talking about metaphysics. I've been dealing with Walter all week. And very good stuff he's saying. He's actually giving me hints on what I could do with my chart. I've got some new ideas.
To expand?
Yeah, or what it's pointing to. It was very amazing what he said.
Well, would it expand somewhere towards the mystery body in a sense? Would it expand?
Well, it'd help explain it.
Explain.
Something like that. He said that that my stuff will be on the level of Darwin, Freud, you know, big meme in about 100 years. And he said, you're doing it now, but you need more complex language and you'll get that. And he gave me a good phrase, electric signatures. So, and it's basically, the astral plane is getting mixed into this plane more and more, which is what awareness said, that Rai, we're post-Rai. Rai's return to essence. Now, that reminded me, you mentioned a synchronicity, Worcester. We mentioned about half an hour ago somebody, and that was Worcester. But I'm trying to remember who it was.
What are you talking about that?
Yes, that's what it was. Yeah. I first heard of him from Dave Worcester, who we did a long interview with and will be up soon. Some of the Paranoid magazine. That's really worth hearing.
I met this guy that did the graphics on a list I was on for the camera I had. And I was trying to learn an editing program and do this, and he was very helpful. And he lives in Hawaii. He lives on Oahu, right? Is that the island of
Oahu?
Honolulu. Yeah, he lives on that island. And Terry lived in the Big Island, so I never been to. I guess we did come to that island, didn't we?
What?
I don't know. Anyway, he lives on.
You were never on Oahu.
Okay.
But that's where Honolulu is.
Yeah.
Okay.
He lives there, and his wife teaches hula, and she comes here quite frequently to teach it to people. She's not Hawaiian. She's not like me. And she's, but they're really into culture. And he's a real interesting guy. And he downloaded me a bunch of stuff. And when they came here, they stopped by my house for about an hour and had lunch on the way to the airport from Santa Barbara, a little bit out of their way. But it was real nice to meet him. And then he told me about this.
Did he tell you about Sheldon Idol, or just about...
He's told me he had found out about him, and he got interested in him, and he wanted to... He was trying to get it put together better so that it had some visuals, but the visuals are nothing in this. So I don't know if they've done something more. It's just like this guy sitting there lecturing, pointing to charts and stuff. It's not a good use of video.
Right. The New Agers are too literary, too book-oriented. They don't mm-hmm. know...
Yeah.
They don't know the modern
sense.
It's
all book. I mean, that's all it is. There's a few pictures and stuff.
It's like a horrible lecture.
Hmm?
It's like a lecture from hell.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's just a really boring lecture.
So Dave Worster...
They're so into it, but he's got an audience of Hawaiian people and...
That's right. Dave Worster told me about this guy about 7 years ago.
And you mentioned the name of this when you were here before.
Yes, Murray.
And I told you, remember, or on the phone or something, and I told you I had a video, so I would give it to
that's
you.
That's what I'll lead to. So I just want to say, he told me about him 7 or 8 years ago.
Uh-huh.
I looked at his website. It was, New Age nuttiness saying that something's going to happen. The aliens are going to land in 2 minutes and get ready. And so that was that. I heard updates. But then a woman in 2001, I met a woman in Dartmouth who I knew from way back, who was in Hawaii, and she knew Sheldon Idol. And because I brought it up. Then I saw her again a couple months ago when I was in Nova Scotia. She gave me a deeper history of the guy and how she was there at the beginning of the group 10, 15 years ago. A little group, this me, New Age group, and then he'd talk, and then it kind of built a cult around it. And
yeah, so this Atlantis and
versus Lemuria.
That Hawaiian is, Hawaii was the oldest land in the world. And you always said, it's the newest land on the world.
It's the newest. It's the newest earth on the face of the earth.
But not
Hawaii
to that.
Yes.
Newest Earth.
Geologically.
Geologically, speaking. Because of these things. But they're saying, no, it's the oldest.
According to Evering, Lemuria was a civilization about 18,000 BC.
Who's going to dispute it?
Then they got,
either way.
Then they got in trouble, and they went to South America. Atlantis starts about 14,000 BC. So this the culture is supposedly older than Atlantis.
But, and that they went other places and they came back. But they're also showing stones and stuff in there. You know, things that they say are markers of this and stuff. So I know, and that's the only reason why I tried to get you to watch it, but it was like...
You or him?
Him.
Yeah. But here's the thing. This, when I was here in December describing going to New Zealand, I talked about going to Lemuria.
Yes,
that we're moving from Atlantic to Lemuria, mm-hmm. or Atlantis. So Kigi, the psychopath on my site, Kigi 888, he noticed I was going to New Zealand, so all through December, January, he's been posting stuff about Lemuria, encyclopedic stuff, blaming me for being a Lemurian, blah, blah, blah. So it's funny that he did that, reinforced it, because he notices where, that I'm in L.A. now, and L.A. is the virtual version of Lemuria, according to my chart, if you look on there. So I've been getting this Lemuria thing rammed at me for 6 months, so it's funny that...
I would give it to you.
And it comes to Worster. Who, the guy who yells at me, or threatens my life, the little kid, he has talked to Worster on the phone. So, that's
how young
timely.
Is that kid that you threatened your life and yells at you?
25. He was born in 83. Oh, so that brings in Randy Copang. Do you know Randy Copang?
You know what happened last night? I called
yes,
Randy. I was going to visit Randy, and I called him. Right after I hung up the
you
phone.
No, I have puffs first.
Okay.
Can you hear in there, Bob?
I just think I could do the
wall. Not very well, the walls are.
I want to hear the word.
Yeah, too good. That's right. It was built right.
Okay, you have your paper towels?
Yeah. Take three, they're small.
Okay. You're trying to be funny?
No, yeah. They
using
are
math?
Small. They are
humor?
Small. The ones that have
you're using math?
He gets the half sheets.
Does he?
Yeah.
Well, you give me them up?
They're half sheets, so when you pull them off,
right, they're smaller.
Yeah, they're smaller.
See now, see what I did? This has been sitting in his back seat for a few days.
Right? On the floor.
On the floor of the car. So I now have to go back out. I clean my hands to open it. Now I have to clean my hands to use it.
Why don't we pour it in a bowl?
But
every time you touch it, your hands are going to get dirty.
And I don't want to be a fanatic.
My answer to her noticing the paradox is that I don't want to be a fanatic, so I want to cancel my whole hygiene by putting dirt back in it, okay? See? Quadrophenia. Double.
The thing is dirty if you touch it.
That's right, but I only use one hand.
Watch this. He's very careful. But the top of your knuckles are getting
in. I think the thing to do would be to invent a popcorn straw.
Popcorn straw?
Yeah.
Or you just go down and you choke to death.
So, who? You.
Oh, yeah. So, I call Randy to confirm that I'm coming out to see him. And I'm sitting back down in my chair. And Nancy puts a video on, I don't know what it is, and the thing starts, and you and Brennan have your heads down on the table, and Randy comes up from behind and introduces you and walks away.
How did you have that?
I videotaped that.
Yeah, because I just got it in my new collection.
I don't have the original tape. Somebody has it. Jerry has it. I sent it to Jerry, and Jerry gave me this dub. It's really pretty poor, but it's still...
And I know what you're referring to because I just got all the Jerry stuff DVD'd and got it when I was on the way to London and back through Toronto.
So you have that on DVD?
Yeah, and there's the picture. He was able to put pictures of the content, some of the different items on the DVD, and there's the Randy one that you're describing.
The audio on this isn't really great, but when I first listened to it, I didn't notice it being bad in certain spots. It gets kind of weird. And I don't think it is probably on the DVD because, if he used the original tape, was high eight.
No, yeah, he probably didn't use yours. He used Jerry's.
No, it was mine. Oh. Nobody else taped it. I gave it to Jerry. Jerry called me and Jerry says, you have a video camera, bring your video camera and tape this. So we set my video camera on a tripod and I just stuck a little lavalier on the table between you guys and picked everybody up pretty well.
So you're saying that whatever quality this is may be not what mine is.
I hope yours is better. Mm. I was thinking the other day when I watched this, because it's a 10-year-old tape. Mm. And they degrade. I hope that the high eight is still okay. It's too bad it's not on DVD because that might last longer.
Now it is.
Huh?
Now it is.
Now it is on DVD.
It is?
I don't have it on DVD. Jerry. Oh.
Remember, all of Jerry's stuff was sent to a guy, the guy made my website a couple years ago. Now, Greg Duffel, though, who digitized all my audio tapes in October, and got all the videotapes, 100 of them something, and he digitized them from November, December, January, February.
Is this the...
And so I flew through London, through Toronto, and picked them up from him.
Is this the one where you're talking about Dylan?
Probably. Yeah, no, it's the one,
I think
the
you
lying
might have
down.
Another one. Yeah, you're lying down.
Yeah, and Tom got mad at that one. He got mad after that.
Oh, and he was being really obnoxious, and you were a little tense at him, too, when Alan then. Yeah.
No, David Lynch. He was bringing himself... I was tense with him.
I could see a little annoyance at a couple of times.
Yeah, because he was being annoying.
He was being annoying. Yeah.
And I sort of knew that he was, he just wasn't. So it was okay what he did, but it wasn't what I thought we were going to talk about.
Scott was there.
Yeah, I was there too.
And Carolyn was out. That's when the hummingbird went in Carolyn's hair. Remember that?
Carolyn wasn't. I was there, she was. I don't remember the hummingbird, but she wasn't there until afterwards, I thought, when she came by and she brought chicken in all of our dishes. We had a vegetarian, so you need some protein. That's when I met Carolyn.
And you don't remember the hummingbird going into her little mohawk?
No, I don't remember that. We had a hummingbird that comes right up like this and stares in your eye. And it's scary because they could go right into your eye. And then they leave. And, Terry's telling me about this hummingbird. He says, honestly, you ought to see this. And it came up and did it to me. Mm. I was telling my daughter about it and came up and did it to her.
Three or 4 inches away from your forehead. This thing could poke your eye out if it wanted to.
And this is recently?
Oh.
It's 6 months ago, maybe.
Yeah.
My name is
Carolyn. After Carolyn was here.
And this was before.
Yeah, we'll blame Carol for that.
No, it was before that. We haven't seen it for a while, but it used to come frequently. They're interesting.
Did you know? Did you put on the Randy Copain to jive with his Randy Copain?
Well, she didn't even know who he was.
Yeah. I just put it on. I said, maybe you'd like to see this because this is what, you know.
So you like it?
We just watched a few minutes of it because I said, we'd rather talk. We were having fun, you know.
Yeah.
So back to your story.
So I gave it back to him.
Yeah.
So tell us your story.
My story? Well, I don't have a story except that I was visiting with Randy last night. I had a little bit of a run-in with him. Bob talked with him today, and I'd like to find out what came of that.
Well, tell him what happened last night.
Well, a guy attacked me for like 2 hours straight.
What?
And he wouldn't admit that he was attacking me. I kept asking, are you feeling defensive or something, Randy? And then he'd get even more mad. And then he'd tell me, I know I sound angry, but I'm not angry. I really don't have anything going on. But then he'd start attacking me again.
About what?
About Bob.
About Bob?
Yeah.
What about Bob? Yeah.
He's got some kind of grievances.
He's got a grievance against me.
He's got a grievance against you?
Yeah.
Boy, are people coming out of the woodwork about against you right now?
No. Yeah, and I got to take it. But now I know what he's. Bob's got the kind of pressures Bob's got to live with.
Well, that's what we're going to get you. Using
too many paper towels?
No. Before we get into that, just a little more. Like, he was saying that Bob's a fraud, blah, blah, blah. And He was saying, we believe this. And Scott says, no, don't include me in this. Then he got mad at Scott for not being included in this party line about me.
So he thinks you frauded.
When he said we, he meant you and I agree about Bob and I. Well, wait a minute. I don't agree with what you're saying. Speak for yourself. And then he'd somehow justify that I said something that agreed with what he thought, and I'm not paying attention to him, and I must be confused. And he just was getting totally insane. I got to the point where I said, "Man, I'm not having any fun anymore. I think we should go." And then he backed off.
Well, what was it he thought was misrepresented or something? Or fraud? What did he think the fraud was?
Well, do you know the way in which Walter had a love-hate relationship with you? There was something about you that threatened him? Walter.
Well, we know about that, but tell me what you
think. I think Randy's got the same thing going on. I think there's... You've said... Walter...
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm okay. Go ahead.
Randy is a UFO researcher.
You're a fraud. That's all we know.
Yeah, you're a fucking fraud. You stay there. Keep your distance. Don't invade my fraudulent territory. But you're counter fraudulent. You're Byzantine fraudulent controlling Terry. I control her, you control him.
See, Scott's I'm not the only one that's been called a fraud.
I get to watch it.
Go ahead. What?
What?
Walter. What?
Yeah, well, no. Randy's a UFO researcher. He's very serious about his research. Bob has said things that were contradictory to what Randy believes, and I think he's built up some grievances, probably because I think there's a sense in which you said things that were contradictory to what Walter believed, and Walter was establishing his reputation on it. So Walter started... On some level, what you were saying was true, and he knew that you were eroding the foundation of his belief system, and it was pissing him off. And I think that's. I think Similar. Randy's got some of that going on, and then Guffy had an issue with you after you chewed him out, and Guffy and Randy became friends, so they started, agreeing. The Bob was there's a light Bob and a dark Bob. And Scott, you don't know the dark Bob, but we do.
The dark Bob.
See, this is what I'm talking about. Metaphysics of light and dark. It's the good and evil. He's walking around carrying this metaphysics that is covering his whole life. Everybody does that.
That's the pre-modern.
It's pre-Neanderthal, for Christ's sake.
No, it goes all the way back up to the modern, and then it starts switching over, and it's taking a hard time, a hard hit, because people can't give it up.
Won't give it up.
The good and the evil, that makes them feel really good, up, right, up and down, back, black and white.
I'd say it's the basic doubleness of human perception, and that's hard to resolve. Then there's culture made out of the doubleness.
That's what I was telling Scott about my feeling about it.
There is
it's
no
just
result.
Our basic survival brain is puts that into. It's the simplest thing that the brain can comprehend in terms of safety. This is good and this is bad. This is dangerous, so it's bad. This is and
fight
nothing in
flight.
Between fight or flight. It's just that simple, and we have to work against that if we're going to evolve into some kind of beings that are not going to kill off whole groups of people all the time, you know, and have war. Do this. We have to evolve against that because it affects everything.
Right, Evan? Evan, you can't be detached here.
I'm sitting back and yeah.
We probably cannot overcome that brain thing. It keeps us alive, but we have to realize at a cost, and so we have to be very careful with it because that's how we, have for centuries, for eons.
Go ahead, Evan.
Oh no, I'm listening.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, so if you're going to be upsetting somebody's strong belief in something, and they're thinking just because you say something counter to it, that means that can't be true, because it's either on, like Bush, you're either for us or against us, you know, and you're that's it.
The thing that surprises me about people like Randy, who's an intelligent guy and is no Bob, and go launch off into these attacks, is that he has no appreciation for the subtleties of Bob's philosophy or what he has to say. He comes offended by at the superficial level in which Bob acts like a megalomaniac. That's all he can latch on to is Bob's
not an act.
Megalomaniac.
You prove that?
No, because I mean you're every man, but you're the center of the universe too.
True.
Just like
you got to start somewhere.
Yeah. So.
But what is?
Well, you know, people say. You know, I got to laugh because you know, just it's not that divergent, but when the Hale Bopp people all killed themselves, everybody, but they were so intelligent. I go, I don't think they were. I don't think they were so fucking intelligent. They all killed themselves.
You're
saying he's so intelligent. I mean, well, maybe he. Well, there's all kinds of intelligence. I mean, electric eels are intelligent. They can make electricity in your body. You know. I mean, flowers are intelligent.
No, it's just that I don't know. There's something you know that Bob presents that struck me as being curious and exciting, and I wanted to ask about it and find out more about it. And I guess Randy just made up his fucking mind somewhere along the way.
Subtly is what she's saying. The fight or flight has to be responded to subtly.
Mm-hmm. You know, you were bitching yesterday about neighbors and their gross interplay. You know, as if I can't understand how these people, what the hell is going on? They can't be a little more subtle and a little more communal in their communication. And I don't experience that with people in general, but last night I did. I'm being attacked for 2 hours.
It's happening more with people.
And why is he attacking me?
They're very anxious right now. And they're doing this because they're scared. They're all scared. You know, their pensions are going away and their future's going away and they might not get
their
enough food. I mean, all they're hearing
thing.
On that tube is horror and fear. And they've been hearing fear for years and years.
They
That's
can't
what's
get
sells.
No respect.
Bob's not selling fear. I mean, what do they think the flying saucers are? See, they probably have a theory the flying saucers are this. They could be anything.
They could be. Yeah. They're either good or evil. Like, I guarantee you that.
Well,
yeah, right.
They're not neutral.
No, that's
well, how do we
thinking.
Know that?
No, we
but,
don't know
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah.
We don't
but you,
know that.
They told you guys told me stories yesterday about fucking UFOs that either you've seen or your
I
friends
have
seen.
I have a picture
seen.
That I took.
Yeah.
My sister, I have a picture of my sister and her husband
so
in Machu Picchu.
There's no controversy about whether or not such things exist, but we can talk forever about what the implications are.
That's a symbol. I'm not saying that I believe that symbol is anything or that the absence of it is anything. It's just a symbol. I saw that photograph. I saw that photograph of Machu Picchu that with her sister and her brother-in-law.
But there is something in it.
There's something in it, and it looks like the symbol that we identify, you know, like War of the Worlds. It looks like a War of the Worlds flying saucer. But that's a symbol. I don't know what the fuck it is.
What do you mean it's a symbol?
No, he knows because what he's saying is we see...
He's saying it's intangible,
no,
but it's like a cloud that's signifying something?
It signifies something to some people, and to other people it just signifies a dot on a piece
and,
of paper.
And you're saying, I don't know what the fuck it is. I don't know if it's UFO or what it is, but it... it makes me think.
UFO means unidentified flying object. We don't
that's
know what
it is.
That's what that means.
Exactly what it means. It's an unidentified flying object.
But if this guy has said that that he knows what they are, you know,
Randy does. Randy, Randy's very Randy's very sophisticated in his analysis of all this UFO stuff. He's gone deep into it for years. He hangs out with the heavyweights in the field. Yeah. But
Did you read the LA Times today? There was a big article on the UFO tracking by that they're setting up near Mount Shasta. UC Berkeley is setting up. They have all these huge dishes at this. I didn't read.
Oh, SETI, yeah, SETI. They're giving more funding to SETI.
SETI.
I don't know.
But what happened? Yeah, what came of your conversation? Bob then spoke with Randy today, and I want to know what came out of that.
What did Randy say today?
He was really nice, wasn't he?
Probably. Was he real nice to you?
The Bob
guys. The big docky question never gets answered. Okay.
You must be very hungry.
I know. You have mac in that bag.
And he's got his hand on the outside of it, but that's the hand that isn't going to get
As my hostess says.
I make those look really good.
My hands are pretty clean. You know,
As
my host says, hostess, who works for the most proper guy in L.A., personal assistant most, that was interesting being among that for them. But she said to some other, Bob will eat 100 fucking gallons of stuff, and then won't eat for 2 days. Then he might eat at 4 in the morning. Bob can do whatever he fucking wants to do with his stomach. I don't want to eat. That's so that you can't pin any habits on it. I haven't had a milkshake in 30 years, and I had 4 of them and broke the local record. Who told you that, right? He tells that one.
I know that one.
Okay, yeah. Guffy.
Go on.
How did he treat you?
A few years ago, I was talking to Scott on the phone, and Randy called. Remember that? We had a three-way. Accidentally.
Oh, yeah. I was living in L.A. That was a long time ago.
2004. Four years
ago. Well, then I must have been in Portland. Yeah. Anyway, I kind of I remember what happened. But
I haven't talked to Randy in 3 or 4 years. My last experience with Randy, in the 90s, he interviewed me. Then I saw them on the web. He didn't get them printed anywhere, so I don't think. They were posted somewhere. I'm reading them, and he's putting all these convoluted polysyllabic words in my statement. He fucking edited it, threw in words, his kind of words, ridiculous big words, into my statements.
With his voice?
No, it was printed.
Oh,
written
all the time.
Published in a, subsequently published in a magazine.
This was Gaffy.
No, this was Randy.
Oh, Randy.
I met Randy about 95.
Okay, yeah, Randy did this.
Turned him on, and he was in UFOs. Oh. Then but he knew there was something odd in the UFO
community.
So
he has no problem editorializing your statement.
Okay, we'll come back to that. Might as well start at the beginning. So I meet him through Jerry. He's an expert on UFOs, but he was troubled by some syndromes. So I gave him the McLuhan thing that he'd never heard, that no one's ever heard, right? So it helped him get a handle on why certain SECTS was happening in the UFO world and the New Age tribalism. So he used my language. He quickly got into the dryness of this. The dryness.
I will give you some.
Yeah, bring water and
make it worse.
Bring water and put it here and we'll have it ready.
I know. What's going on here?
I think that this
you guys are usering
this naval stuff comes from those four milkshakes. You
I've
want
had,
some of this?
Oh, sure.
Listen, I've had 6 days.
He had 6 Snicker bars since then.
Sugar.
Oh,
I've had
that's why
sugar.
You're so
I've been
that
celebrating.
Makes,
yeah, I got sick of all the sugar. It's not even cold, it's just extra yeast.
Are you not
not now.
Lemon. Mm-hmm. And
thanks.
What's the other thing?
Later, a little later, I had food also, like she did.
Well, I don't blame you. When you're hungry, just like Bob, you should eat when you're hungry.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
Yeah, it's the only way to eat. I'm listening.
So he started adapting McLuhan to whatever he wrote. He wrote for Perception magazine, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Remember that Perception magazine? And 96, 97. And I'd read it, and there'd be sprinkles of quotes from McLuhan or me throughout these articles. But it was all stupid, you know, botched, immature understanding of McLuhan, you know. But that's that. Then he interviewed me in 97. And they showed up on the internet a year or two later. And, you know, he would ask a question. It was ridiculously convoluted. He liked using big words. And then I would answer. So I read the transcript, and he's got me saying some of his big polysyllabic kind of weird contraption words. So I called him up and said, Randy, what'd you do that for? And I don't know what he said. He might have said, well, I just wanted people to understand what you were saying. And yeah, and, but he's like, he's not a college guy. He's kind of got an immature left hemisphere development, so he overdoes pomposity or something.
To be like learned. He's an academic.
Yeah, yeah, and he doesn't know how to do it. So I said, well, the interviews are interesting, what originally was said, but I can't use any of them. I can't put them on my website because they're not what I said. That was one like the last thing I said to him. Kind of said, that was stupid, Randy, that you did that. I didn't have a big tantrum against him. I just said, yeah, I'm not going to publish them. They're not going to be known. And they're floating around, and I'll have to deny them if it ever comes up.
Yeah. So, because, well, everybody who knows you will know that you don't talk that way.
Yeah. So
that's one of the great things.
Yeah.
Right. Most people, this is one of the problems we have. Yeah. We have all these academics who think they're so brilliant, and they just obfuscate so bad instead of helping people to get beyond all this stuff, which they could do, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then they're so afraid we will find out they don't know any more than all of us by common sense figured out.
Exactly. Thank God they don't use easy to understand terms like Android meme.
Yeah.
No, but I do a lot of explaining. I'll take the time to explain it, and my explanation is simple.
Yeah. Right? Simple, and it takes about 15 years to let it sink in.
Okay, but you're
to perceive. Take 15 years to perceive what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That's why I keep it simple. You gotta, I'm just describing the weather, but the weather isn't what you fucking feel. What you think you're seeing. So, the weather.
I agree.
See, Bob Dylan was wrong.
Big wrong. Big.
So what, now we want to get back to the subject of what did he say to you today?
So,
in what tone?
They called me up in 2000 or something. Said,
we're not going to get to it.
No, yeah, I give you the proper history. No, I'm good. Doing it simply.
I understand.
Yeah.
It's so, the devil's in the details.
Not that many details.
Okay.
It may seem like that. But, you know, a few minutes. So he said he was some guy, UFO guy, who thought should hear my tapes that I did in Mesquite, where I met her at the UFO Congress. And, he said he'd do it, but he never followed through. So I said, well, Randy just makes up this stuff when he's talking to me to pretend that he's doing something for me so he can pick my brains for other things. So I didn't talk to him for three years or something. Then when he's on the phone with me and Scott, three-way, and we're just talking about this and that. And he's talking about how he and Guffey encountered Mr. Illuminatus. Remember that detailed
story? Oh, yeah, I remember.
And some guy used to listen to my show.
Dr. Illuminatus.
Then I found out that Randy was seeing Guffey. I said, what's with Guffey? I don't hear from him anymore. He won't answer my emails. He said, well, Guffey, I think he said it pretty quickly. Guffey says that you were forcing him to write the Twin Peaks article about how Twin Peaks is about you. And he got tired of being forced and then he didn't want to write it and he thought you were forcing him to write it. And so I heard that the basic story, and I said, well, that's not true, but I don't know what I said. I don't know if I figured out immediately. Within a couple of days, I figured out what happened. So that's basically what he said, that Guffey did not want to be exploited by me, pressured by me anymore. So he disappeared. So what? Around that time, I know that Guffey... And I knew about his girlfriend, and I knew she had a problem, and he emailed Carolyn about it, and got some advice about it, and then thanked her for it. Carolyn mentioned that to me. Normally she's not supposed to talk about patients, but somebody came up and she said, well, Guffey did this, and I said, well, that's strange, he always talks to me about his girlfriend. Why'd he go to you? What do you know? You know, jokingly. So I thought, Guffey, he either didn't, somewhere in there he'd already decided not to talk to me. So he probably didn't want me to know what was going on the next level with his girlfriend. So I didn't hear it all, but I heard a bit of it. But that was a sign to me that he was hiding. So those two factors. I'm telling you that what Randy said and what Carolyn said, those were two factors. So then I realized a few days, I know what happened. What happened was,
his friend Jim, you know, Jim Liebenau. They had a high school. Jim had a high school buddy, maybe a little older. Steve Seaman, you know what Steve Seaman? He's a guy who was, they looked up to, or at least Jim did, and Guffey knew of him. He went into the FBI, rose very high in the FBI, and then sometime in the middle 90s, he ends up on a beach around here and kills himself.
Really?
So why did this happen? So they'd been wondering about it, and so they asked me, what do I think? And I said, I don't know, but I can find out how. I'll go to the Evergreens. And I said, you can't tell anybody about this, because you never know where somebody sees and knows that what Michael Blake Reed said in trance is true, they will go after Michael. They'll know this guy can tell anything. We got to kill him. So I said, I'll do it, but you can't tell anybody. So I went and got the reading, and the Evergreens explained what happened to him. And I gave him a copy of the tape, that part. And they loved it. And what was amazing is that within a few days, a friend dropped in from the West Coast, or East Coast, and they told me they played it for him. I said, what are you guys doing? You're not supposed to tell anybody about this. And they said, well, he didn't understand it anyway. So that was odd, but they did that. What the Evergreens said is that this guy went high up in the FBI, and some Japanese corporation or somebody wanted to get some dirt on the Democratic Party. They thought he knew. So they took him out to dinner. They had an ostensible reason to meet with him. Took him out to dinner, gave him a drug. They didn't know the drug would have that extreme reaction. And on it, he went paranoid, psychotic, and went home, did something there, and then went to the beach and shot himself. So it just had an over-intense effect on him. So it was an accident. So the Japanese people disappeared, and the Evergreens said, you will see in the newspaper that they don't admit that it's over. I just say it's over, case closed, but then they don't if you read it carefully. And I read it and saw that that was true. And he said that the cops know that some Japanese people did something to him. They may not know the drug, but they know that something happened. But they don't know how to find the Japanese guys. They just got scared and left. So that's the fact, supposedly. So they play it. So Jim hears it, and he's all happy to know about what happened to his hero, Steve Seaman. He's like the all-American kid. They sent me the articles, newspapers about him and all that. Everybody's shocked that he died. So over the last couple of years, just to update a little bit, Jim now uses that name, Steve Seaman, as his email name. So that's all good, other than they played the tape, and that's back in 2001 or something. So a few years later, 2003, 2004, Guffey sends me a journal he edits at a literary journal for the Long Beach College. So I'm reading the story, his story, and it's all about Michael Blake reading this whole fucking thing right there in his literary journal. He wrote up the story, slightly changed the names, but had the Evergreens name and everything all right in there. In a journal, in a thing that students would read. So I called him, I said, Guffey, what the fuck you doing? He says, only about 8 people would read that. Nobody reads this journal. It doesn't matter. You didn't even ask me whether you should do it. You got to remember, you got to deal with me. You got a fucking agreement. And you can't be doing this. You said, you fucked up my relationship with Michael. I never hold anything for Michael. And I'm not going to tell Michael this, because it might cause him worry. So I have to hold something back from Michael, which causes a little psychic dissonance, you know. Said, thanks a lot, Guffey. So Guffey was, you know, he was probably totally embarrassed that he did this. He didn't know, he didn't think. He thought he put a neat story in.
He didn't apologize, did he?
Well, he might have apologized, but that's irrelevant. He should have known.
Did he apologize? I'm just wondering if he really did know. Did he really acknowledge he did something wrong, or did he just start blaming you?
Yeah, at that time he was kind of saying, look, Bob, no one's going to read it.
Yeah.
I said, how do you know?
So, I mean, what I'm saying, the psychology of it, is the guy did you wrong.
Yeah.
He did you wrong twice.
I did him a favor.
And then he tells you each time, nothing.
Yeah.
You see, that's the source of evil.
Yeah.
When people do something like that, because then he's going to scapegoat Bob. And see, Bob is a fallacy. Because he himself didn't hold up his agreements and keep a good relationship with him. He now has this attack Bob.
Yeah.
And you. Because he can't admit.
See, this goes to the good and evil, back to the good and evil whole paradigm. If we could drop good, then we could drop evil. But see, he wants to be so perfect, like Walter did.
Yeah.
That's why he would call him horrible, and then he'd say he's a genius. Because he wanted himself to be seen as so perfect. Do you think you're perfect?
No.
See?
I am, but I don't think I'm perfect.
I know. I know, I have the same problem.
There's a difference.
First time humans ever said that. I am perfect, but I don't think I'm perfect.
Right.
I don't communicate I'm perfect. I listen to your imperfection.
Yeah. No, I've heard yogi.
You're perfect in the sense that the universe is unfolding exactly as it should at every moment, and you're part of that. So
I'm me.
Yes,
he's like, this is what Walter's saying, Bob. They're going to worship you in 100 fucking years. And he later was driving home, and Walt and James suddenly said, oh, they're going to be writing paintings.
Well,
they're going to make paintings of you, Bob. Well, they're going to make cartoons. I'm going to be a meme. The point is that
I already have a cartoon of you.
That's right. I will have accomplished something. And at the same time, at total slack, live the perfect fucking life. No one ever had as much slack as me ever in history.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Will you agree with that? Are you going to write ironically?
She can't agree with that because she would have to know everyone.
No. What did you just say?
I said, right.
Ironically?
No.
Good. Well, yeah, she agrees.
Oh, well. Did I say it ironically?
I'm going to
take a picture of Bob so I can paint him.
Anyway, the first cartoon of Bob. I'm just saying that...
So what did Randy say?
Yeah, fuck my perfection. Forget about that.
Yeah, we're done.
We know I'm perfect. We know I believe it. We know I will not deny. I will deny it in court. I'm not my own asshole. I killed Kennedy, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
I ruled your country. I can't be perfect.
So you get on the board, Brent.
The thing is that I did not get into the good-bad thing. I just said, I said, you created a problem for me. I didn't say you're bad. You created a problem, and that's what you have to understand. Don't create problems for people.
Right.
Don't fuck up their life. Fuck up your own life.
See, I didn't say you got into that. He did.
Yeah.
And is evidenced by what he said later. And that's how I see it. You're right. When you tell these things, you can see how this started with him.
Yeah.
He did. You know, Bob could have done
that. This is not Randy.
This is
Randy's friend, Guffy.
Okay, but they're together on this. They've agreed.
Later,
I don't know
later.
What you did to him, but I mean, or what he did to himself. I'm saying
what you're saying, that I did not want to make it a good, bad thing. I just said, on a practical level, you caused a problem here.
See, Scott says, how is it that parents can hate their kids or not like their kids? That's exactly how they do it. Their kids...
Oh, that was one of our subjects.
That was one of our subjects. Could be pretty innocent, you know? Mm-hmm. But the parents do something, the kids see them, and they go, I didn't do that, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's... You know, there's all these examples all over the place.
The kids say, I didn't do
Why
it.
Did you... Yeah, or the kid will say... There was an example I was reading, the kid would say, Dad, why did you call Grandma a bitch? And he says, go wash your mouth out with soap. How dare you say such a word like that? You know what I mean? That's the same kind of thing. And it doesn't seem like a big thing, but these things add up. Like Bob's telling you one after another. It's not one event. It's a whole...
Cognitive dissonance.
It's a whole pattern. And the way it worked out with each time, it just got worse, which showed that the guy didn't really respect the agreements that he had.
Which
and he wanted to blame you, and anybody else.
He pretended himself as respect me, wrote good articles, I mean all that. But anyways, people do go nutty around me at some point.
Because
of the intensity, or the what?
Glad for the warning, right?
Yeah, no, they get a little wacky. That's a normal psychiatric rebellion thing. So I could mean that.
Yeah, Guffey's a young man too, in his early 20s or something.
No, 30.
Was he already?
Guffey was born in 72.
Oh.
So he's 40. 36? Yeah,
okay,
maybe.
What about Randy Cook's stuff?
I figured out what it was 4 years ago. I figured, so I'm thinking back. This is a year or so after he screwed up with Steve Seaman. And he's not talking to me. So, he's feeling guilty about what he did with Steve Seaman. And he's projecting that I'm the problem. And he has... And in a way, I didn't tell him I'm cutting off, but it was a problem from that point on, once I got irritated by what he did. How are we going to talk after that? How am I going to trust him? So he's not going to be talking to me all the time. Mm-hmm. And eventually you're going to have to come up with a reason why he doesn't talk to Bob anymore. The reason it came up was the Twin Peaks thing. So I'm figuring, Randy told Randy all that, because Randy had agreements against me for whatever reason. and you know, a more intellectual embarrassment reason.
Right.
And so they got together and fed on each other.
Yeah.
So I'm telling you how I figured out in 2004 what Randy said about me and Guppy at Twin Peaks. I've given you what I figured out.
Yeah.
No talk with Guppy since then, and no talk with Randy.
Right.
Until he meets Randy last night.
Yeah.
And Randy spews out all this shit about Bob's, you know, the Guppy Randy hallucination. And that surprised him, and he had to deal with it for like 4 hours. So he tells me this morning. Oh, yeah. He tells me this morning. And I said, well, that's it. I'm going to call up Randy. What's his number? Did you give me his number?
Yeah.
So I called him up.
Yeah.
It's time Randy found out what the fuck's going on.
Yeah.
So I didn't know whether he'd answer or not, maybe leave him a message.
Yeah.
So, hello? I go, Randy. I didn't even say who I was. I said, this thing about Guppy and Twin Peaks, you know where that comes from? And I went through the Steve Seaman thing. He goes, oh, I remember, and he didn't know, I remember that. So he listened obediently, or nicely, and I explained all that I explained to you, and he goes, well, that clears up a lot of things, and he appreciated what I told him. That's what Randy said.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so he's acting all sober. Now, I know from Walter Bowert's point of view that Randy is nuts.
Mm-hmm.
He caused a lot of problems when Walter stayed there. And I know that Randy thinks Walter's nuts.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hearing Randy be sober, mature with me. But I'm not believing it. He's just doing it at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the snake shows up and the little mouse is frozen, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I froze him. He didn't expect this.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him the stuff and he appreciated the new update. I then told him about the UFOs and the remote viewing. I told him the secret on that. So I said, now, Randy, I'm telling you this stuff, and you can't tell anybody, because you'll get Michael in trouble. So I'm going to tell you, and when you go around your UFO world, look at people, and they all believe it's James Schnabel's book, Remote Viewing, that history of Stanford Research. It really was a big distraction to hide the fact it was the Evergreens. And he found that very interesting. I said, no, you're going to enjoy this, and you'll be tempted to tell people, but don't tell anybody. Just have the information in your head, and watch what everybody says, and you know a little bit more if you believe what I'm saying. And then you'll see how people distort, or how it's covered up, or blah, blah, blah. Just have this as a way, it's like a mental drug. Put this on and watch the UFO community when you have this inside information.
And what are you actually referring to right now?
The Evergreens. That the Evergreens are the real source of the remote viewing. The CIA used remote viewing at Stanford with Hal Puthoff, Russell Targ, and all the people she's interviewed for years. Well, that was publicized because the real people they used was the Evergreens. I'm not going to tell anybody that they use the Evergreens. They don't want them to know. This is a big secret in the UFO world.
That answers a couple of questions for me that have been...
Yeah. That's the kind of thing. If you know that, you already had the question. Randy may not have the questions, but if he thinks this, whatever questions do show up, that might help him see things clearly. So I cleared him up in his own world, the UFO world, cleared him up in Guppy, and he loved it. He really thanked me for it. So I said, then we talked about me moving to Maui. I said, you know, Randy, you need to talk to me more often. You need to be told what's going on from my point of view so that you have that angle to bounce off. And also what you write about McLuhan's crap. And he said, you know, I was just writing an article now, and he says, I was quoting you. He was just doing that this past couple of days. So there's another level why I came in. You know what I mean? He evoked me because he's quoting me. And I don't know what he's saying, but he said he'd send it to me, I guess. So I said, you need to talk to me more so you can stay more balanced and learn more. And he agreed. So it ended like him saying, well, I'll look forward to your next call, Bob. Okay. Now, I know I may be talking to him now. Doesn't mean that he'll remember this the way he was tomorrow. You know what I mean? But one thing he said was, near the end, so by the way, Guppy called me up and said, hey, Bob's on
Evan
the other night. Guess who left this message? And Randy guessed, but didn't guess. It was Michael Shields. And Randy goes, Michael Shields. And Guppy says, how did Michael get my phone number? Okay? So Randy is telling me this. And I said, well, I told Michael I was on. Michael actually inspired me to be on, or set it up, made it possible. he might have gotten Guffey's number from Jerry Fialka or somebody. He didn't get it from me. I don't have it. And it remained a mystery. How did Michael get Guffey's number? Because I said to Randy, you know, Guffey, it's like Randy was puzzled why Guffey was surprised that Michael had his number. Randy thought Guffey knew Michael, and that was okay. So Randy's asking me, well, why would Guffey be puzzled by that? Well, you don't know that Guffey avoids the Jerry Fialka, Dobbs, Michael Seals network, you know, and he avoids that. And then he told me, I said, you know, he got married, you know, and he said, yeah. I said, have you seen his baby? He said, no, it's only 3 months old. And then he told me something personal, so I got that on Guffey, you know, on the marriage thing. So I said, it wasn't the woman he had a few years ago, and he said, no. I said, was it a student? He said, yes. So I said to Randy, I'm going to call up Michael and get Guffey's number. So I called up Michael and tell him how Guffey was surprised. And I said, how did you get it? He said, I went to a site that has everybody's address and all this private details, and you pay them for it. But he put in Guffey's name, and it came up free. All right? So he said, I got the address and the phone number. That's how I got the phone number, and I called it and left a message. Then, I said, okay, can you get me the number? And he said, yes, but I have to check it out. I'll have to do it. So he called me back a half hour later, and he got the number, but he said, you know what I did? I first did it by just putting it in Google. And it came up on Google. Information you have to pay for on the other site, even though Michael didn't pay for the information on the other site. And he says, these companies that have everybody's addresses, they siphon credit card information somehow. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's sold to them. That's how they get it. But Google, with its super SpongeBob environment, they sponge everything. So they get the stuff. So you can get it on Google's. So I said, well, this is great. I'm going to call up Guffey and tell him that his ID is all over the place. I'll do him a favor. So Michael liked that, and that was cool. And so I called the number.
Scary what Google has on there.
Yeah, it's interesting how that they can absorb stuff from sites that supposedly get it locked in and you got to pay for it.
Well, I think there's a lot of stuff on that pay site that is not, you're not going to find it in Google, and you will have to go to the pay site. But there's a
bleedy.
Yeah, whatever you call it when two things get over top of each other, a bleed through or whatever.
Oh. Yeah. So let me tell you this. I want to finish. There's another point. So I call up Guffey's number, and I'm wondering if he's going to answer. Uh-huh. That would have been fun. No answer against machine. So I go, Guff. I don't even say who I am. I say, Guff, the reason Michael Seals got your... Totally, I got him under surveillance. The reason how do I know that he's wondering how Michael Seals got his number? Yeah. He doesn't know Randy talked to me. So I go, Guff, the reason Michael got your number, and I explain this whole thing, technically, all the way through. I said, maybe you want to look into that and get it off the records.
You can't.
Talk to you soon.
You can't.
So that's Guffey. I don't know. That's what I did. It was all perfect. I got to comment after telling his friend about what's really going on. Then I got his number and told him something.
I think it's really hard. Like, when I met you guys back in 98, they were like your
99,
was it?
August 99.
You know, when I met you guys, I, you know, saw that you kind of had a harem of, you know, followers. You know,
I didn't. There. They acted like that.
Yes, they
a
did.
A harem?
Like a harem.
I like that.
Right?
To be called a harem.
And for, like, you know, Randy and them, I can see what kind of a crisis you bring for just the male identity, because here it is, people want to get information, they want to dress it up and be able to go to cocktail parties and impress other people with knowing. But when they come up with something and it's countered, and not because you've studied, but because you've lived it, it undermines...
You mean I've lived it or they've lived it?
You've lived it.
Exactly. Lived it, yeah.
So, you know, when they come with their theories and their basis and everything like that, and they're trying to make a living off of being a conduit of information, all they could be is a tap into your information. Their identity is lost. So that's why Randy will sit there and jack your information. Mm. That's why Guffey is trying to untap to find himself.
Yeah.
You know?
But I know that.
Well, that's what the backlash is. That's what, you know, it's all about. But it really comes down to, I think, a crisis in male identity for authority. And I think the world is in a huge crisis.
No, even all the way back then, I think there was...
When you hear words, though, Rai, the original male principle in identity and authority in priests, that's disappeared in 67. What you just said is what he says. So when you hear that interview, think about what you're thinking now when you hear it.
What? All the way back to Mesquite, when we first met, I think that for, this is my projection, so it could be totally wrong, but I think that Randy was beginning to develop some professional jealousy. And I think that...
because he'd known me like 4 years.
And the thing that just bothers me, is that I don't think he ever really looked
into it,
into understanding... what you know,
what you had
to contribute, what your unique contribution is.
Yeah.
I don't think.
I know. It's shown in his articles.
No, because it wipes him out.
Yeah.
Walter.
Yeah.
And wiped out the foundations that he stood on.
Right.
Right. And it comes from somebody who was possibly a part of the things that he looked at.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like. People either have to plug their ears around Bob, or else they can't go out and sell the books and the tapes and spin their own reality when there's somebody that has so much impact and authority to talk about.
Right.
The history that you come from and that you, I mean, you could blow out the whole industry if you were able to talk on each of those topics, but they have to keep that away so that somebody can have a false sense of authority on stuff and be able to sell books.
That's beautifully said, Robin.
And that's the inflation button. That's what we meant with culture's our business. If you put a bad meaning on business, culture is our bad fact. Everybody has to make, the advanced cultures have to make money in the information industries.
Right.
So everybody has to be an authority.
Right.
You're taking away their cotton field they plant.
Exactly.
Well, one thing that Randy said last night that he really respected about Marshall was that Marshall got his picture taken with Buckminster Fuller. Marshall was recognized by heavy hitters, and Bob will never be recognized by the heavy hitters because he's too wacky. And so he's putting all this there's something to do with the integrity of getting in the big league and being recognized
they believe in the mainstream.
He started ranting last night. Marshall doesn't need Bob or anybody to prop up his legacy. Marshall's legacy was bigger than Bob's will ever be, and he doesn't need Bob to be propping up Marshall.
And what he's saying about himself is, who am I? I have nothing to, because of what he learned from Bob, it's that
I'm going to learn it from Marshall.
Exactly, exactly. And he still won't get it. And then he'll sit there and be trying to compete with Bob, and Bob, so like this, he'll never reach it, so he has to attack at the knees.
And this is part of this week's synchrony. Yeah. Randy Copain, Guppy been lying there. They both, Guppy lived with Walter for a little while. Mm-hmm. Spent a few days in the trailer. Mm-hmm. He was shocked that Walter drank his urine, because Walter was into that Indian stuff.
Right, right.
So they both had concounts with Walter, and they both freaked out by Walter.
Right, right.
So they got that to work with. They both were obsessed with Operation Mind Control when it first came up. But here it is this week. You know, Walter lived at Randy's. He said Randy lived in the little part of the thing and had Walter up front. The little part was a mess. He said, you know why Randy didn't live in the big part? She put the guests there. So he was nutty. This week, when I'm talking to Walter through a spirit about all my stuff, then Randy shows up because he's part of that nexus. Of Walterness.
Right.
And so, an example of Guppy being, or Randy being uninformed, right when he's, and this is the other side, right when he's Marshall does not need Bob, he does not know that Mary McLuhan has hired Bob to resuscitate the McLuhan legacy.
Oh, I told him that last night. It just made him matter.
Yeah, it makes him matter. That's her point. He can't see it, he just gets emotional.
Yeah.
But you see the irony, right when he's forced it years back. I mean, you know about Mary McLuhan, I told you about her, right?
Scott did.
Right. So...
Or you did, I don't know.
Mary,
both of you might.
Mary has had a revolutionary life. She's the smartest of the kids. I mean, Eric's pretty smart, but he's a stick in the mud and doesn't have the personality. You know, she has raised $25 million since 1982 that she gave to teachers around North America, awards for innovation in teaching. You go to her website, it's all Bilderberger companies that gave her money. Kissinger calls her once a month. Vince Cerf, who invented half the internet, calls her every second Sunday. So while I'm here, she says, Bob, we're going to start a new center, a new website. What flashiness do we need? I said, well, you know celebrities. Wes interviews celebrities about McLuhan. She says, okay, I'll get Jack Nicholson. So she calls up Jack, gets him. We got to phone him right now and see what's happening. And do that in a minute. And then, meanwhile, she, in the course of it, talks to Martin Scorsese. In the course of getting contacted through Jack's agent, Martin Scorsese answers, oh, Mary, you know that I'm a follower of McLuhan, too. Mary goes, oh. And he says, yes. As a matter of fact, I've read way more books than Jack on McLuhan. I understand. Yeah. They start competing right there.
There it is. That's yeah. what it is.
Yeah, the male thing. I know more about McLuhan than Jack. You should be interviewing me. So Mary and I are laughing about that. But Mary can call up anybody. And she got them one of the most powerful. Do you know the law firm Morrison and Furster? You ever heard of them? Morrison and Furster. Anyways, major law firm in the United States. The woman who was a key partner in that was Secretary of Education under Carter, Shirley Hofstetler. She's the substitute mother for Mary. Anyways, there's a whole thing going on with the McLuhan Institute. So Mary's been married a couple times. Never loved anybody. Never really loved any man. Now she loves me. Okay? Totally loved. Because I give her fun. I give her ideas. I remind her of her father. All this stuff. So it's all an emotional thing. So we try to keep cool about it.
Eric must be fucking furious.
When he finds out, he's going to go nuts.
Oh, man. They're going to have to put him under watch.
Yeah.
Why is that? He's competitive with you?
Remember, he told Andrew Crystal.
Eric is Marshall's son.
And he hates
who considers himself to be the heir to the...
What?
He told Andrew Crystal he hates you?
He got mad that Andrew acknowledged me in the intro to the thesis.
He considers himself to be the heir to Marshall's legacy, and he doesn't like Bob.
Yeah. Oh, God.
And now Bob is, and now his sister is appointing Bob as the heir to Marshall's legacy. And Eric has built a career on being the heir. I mean, he's a professor. He goes around and lectures on this stuff.
And Mr. McLuhan
earns his living at it. Bob doesn't even earn a living at it.
Mrs. McLuhan died on April 4th. So the family got to find him. Yeah, just a few months ago.
He just died.
Yeah. And so she got some money. She's so excited about it all that she's going to move to Maui with us and set up the McLuhan Center there just to be near me. And she loves Carol too, but she didn't know Carol that well, but she respects what she's learned. But the part of the magic of this, so much fucking synchrony happens between me and Mary since I started talking to her in February. It's just off the charts. And she said,
you're genuine.
That's right. She said, you're genuine. And I'm efficient, and I help her. When she needs something, I do it. And she has said, I haven't gotten any of that ever for years. But the interesting thing is how her mind goes. When this synchrony overwhelms her, she's usually goes, stop it, stop it. It's like she's coming, stop it, stop it, stop it. Then she goes, Marshall's doing this. This is all predestined by Marshall. He's up in heaven and he's doing this. And I say, yeah, that's what's happening. That's the way that's her final big meme that Marshall's running this. That's the only way she can understand this synchronistic, you know, concept. So I'm bringing this up as ironic that he's going on about how Marshall. And so it's interesting to hear that complaint right this week when all this other stuff is going on. So I told him that too. And I didn't say that in my little run-through, but I told Randy that part, too. So you talk about me not... You know that I'm hired now to prop up the fucking legacy?
You mean you're asking
to
work for money?
It'll be underground. It'll be odd. It'll be an odd situation.
It won't be money directly.
Yeah.
Like a pay.
Bob will donate it. He'll donate
it. Give it to Dobbstown.
He'll donate it to Dobbstown.
I mean, you know. Okay, what did you say? What was your just? What did you just say? Your interpretation?
No, did you said that to Randy? I'm hooked up with Mary now, or
yeah, what? What I told you, I told him. Yeah. I said besides, you know, all that other stuff. I said now you're also saying that I'm
that McClune doesn't need me. Well, you know what, Randy? He does need me. And you know who said that? His daughter. So I laid out all that I'm doing.
You said that. Cool.
Yeah, I told him because I went to everything you told, you remember, that he said. So I addressed everything.
Oh, okay. Well, then you haven't told us everything because I told you stuff we haven't got to yet. Well, at least that point.
I hadn't told you 10 minutes ago, but I'm telling you now. Right. Now you're saying you didn't tell me that?
No, I did tell you that. You haven't brought that up yet, so there's
but
more.
I just did.
I'm saying, yeah, and there's more to the story. Is there any more to the story?
Well, no, that's basically what I said, but I'm also thinking, I didn't say this to him.
So still at the end, after saying that, he still said, okay, look forward to your next call? That's okay.
Yeah, no, it was just, I appreciate the
clarity. Yeah, he was just like tonic at that point.
Yeah, he was appreciative that I was clarifying all these points. So I made I clarified, you know, the McClune, the Evergreens, you know, the remote viewing, yeah, and Guffey. That's the three heavy things, and he said, well, I appreciate having a new perspective on it.
Yeah. You know? See, the situation is when the boss walks in the room, people are like, the boss is here, you know. Salute, you know.
But when
we're alone, it's like he's bitching about the boss.
He's gonna get you, Scott, because yeah, he knows you told the boss.
Yeah. Oh, I don't fucking care.
I'm surprised you haven't heard from me.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't.
Your
care.
Phone is off. That's fine.
I have a question. When you called him last night, it sounded to me I was just overhearing, but it sounded to me like he really didn't want you to come around.
No, it's just that Randy is he's becoming so set in his ways. That an impromptu visit, he had to like organize his whole fucking life around it.
Oh, I see.
And I was, you heard the irritation in my voice because he says, well, so I just got home from I got your message, Scott. It was good to hear from you. Oh, great, let's get together. And I was feeling like I was worried about becoming an imposition. I'd been here a long time. I was, well, let's get together. Well, it's 8:00. I just got home. I got my groceries and I got to make food. So why don't you come like between 10:30 and 11? That was as fast as he could organize himself to be able to accept it. And I'm like, well, why don't we just go out and get some food or something, man? Goes, well, no, I got my groceries here. And so then
you go there.
I get there at 11. Randy, let's go out and get some coffee or something. And he goes, well, there's nothing open this time. And I says, oh, sure there is, Randy. And he goes, well, if you got here earlier, we could have got some food. That's his greeting to me.
If you had gotten here earlier,
yeah, there would have been something open.
He was in war mode.
Yeah. So, Randy, get in the car. We'll find something.
Does it sound like he was trying to, like, ooh, I don't know.
So he was sending you red flags, like, don't
remember.
Don't come here. Huh?
And then when he got in the car.
He was just the opposite of you. He was trying to avoid a fight, and then he started it. Remember when you said you wanted to start a fight, and then you wanted to run away from it about some...
Oh, when I was a kid, yeah.
The opposite of that.
But then he started when he got in the car. What's that? Sounds like something new you were saying.
No, when he got in the car, he was being so mousy. I couldn't hear what he was saying, and it was like bugging me. I'm like, turn up the... I didn't say it. I'm like, but I was getting irritated because he's like, and he's talking, and he's being so like distant and mousy and non-communicative. Then once we sat down and I, you know, started to ask the right questions and turn on the tap, the guy became so intense. He was like a fire hose, man.
Well, I mentioned Bucky Fuller. He thinks it's great that McClune got seen with Bucky Fuller. Mm-hmm. McClune considered Bucky Fuller an old-fashioned fart.
Yeah.
A guy in the 19th century. So Randy doesn't know that. McClune didn't need anybody, didn't care about anybody, and he wasn't trying to appeal. He gets the big thing of going to the Bilderbergers, and he chews them out and insults everybody. So, I always say that the subgeniuses, that Wyndham Lewis was the first subgenius, and McClune carried on the baton, the second subgenius. And you see it the way McClune lived. So
isn't that in Andrew's thesis?
Yes. Well,
probably.
That statement, almost.
How far along are you guys on the thesis?
Oh, God.
25 pages.
Take a couple of years to read.
No.
It will in my case.
Read it.
I'm 10 pages into it.
Andrew Crystal's PhD thesis on McClune. he's proving that that my essay on McClure.
Can I take that? I have it on my computer. Can I burn it onto a CD?
She's got it.
Can I burn it on a CD?
Burn what?
Wait, it's not on there anymore. Can I burn it onto a CD?
Burn what? What's
his
it?
The PDF, I guess you call it.
Yeah, why would you want to?
For her?
You could do it as a document. So you can have a CD.
You can email it to her.
Drag it straight over to the CD.
It's a huge document to email. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. It's 120 megabytes. Or 60.
Yeah. How do I do it?
So you can
do it.
Oh, sure. I'll do it.
What are you going
to
do?
Just burn a CD of it.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
This tag probably won't fill it.
Oh no, it's a tiny amount, but it's a lot to email. You could email
it's
but
a lot to email, yeah. Even with
it's like 65 megabytes or something.
To get it, yeah. Even with high speed.
Yeah. Oh, you know what I can do for you if it would make it easier? Well, doesn't matter.
Did you just say Richard Chamberlain?
No, she did. Your wife.
Yeah. I'll try to fix it up here. Oh, a couple of years. This is a disservice of eating this thing, but I'm used to cleaning up after me. They sneak all over the place.
You got a cold?
Nope. It's allergic to your place. Allergic to your house. I'm actually allergic to you, Terry. You in particular.
Breaking my arm.
You're such a cynical guy now that you're not a working man. You have no pretense of office.
I'm still a working man. I've never had any pretense of office. I'm not a working man.